This is the Mike Lupica Podcast.
This podcast is great because your enthusiasms, it's why we've all been reading you for so long. This is a great vehicle for you to actually get to, in a long-form way, explore those enthusiasms, sometimes with the perspective of an additional 10 or 20 years.
Thanks for doing this today, pal.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having
the
me.
Fun of this is I just talk to guys that I want to talk to.
That's what, to me, is such a blast about listening to your show.
First of all, the first time I ever saw Bernie on television, I started to talk like him as I was watching him.
Can you imagine the great Michael Jordan saying, hey, you know what? We can't beat the Pistons. Let me go join them. The essence of sports is about competition.
In-your-face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica. Mike Lupica.
Welcome back to the Mike Lupica Podcast. And as of last Monday, with Rick Tyler, my friend, who's a big-time analyst on MSNBC, we have done 210 Mike Lupica podcasts since we began. And we thought this would be a good week to circle all the way back to our very first one, because we came out of the box pretty damn good. And the way we came out was with my friend Larry David. He would make further appearances on the podcast, but this is how it all started. By any measure, my first guest is the most successful graduate in the history of Sheepshead Bay High School, Brooklyn, New York. He and Jerry Seinfeld created Seinfeld. Larry David was the executive producer. He wrote over 60 episodes. They only called it Seinfeld, what, because Mary Tyler Moore Show was taken, Larry?
At first, you know, it was the Seinfeld Chronicle. And then there was a show on right at that time called The Marshall Chronicles, which I didn't know about, but then we found out about. And so we had to take out the Chronicles. The rest is history.
And then came Curb Your Enthusiasm, which became, in its way, even as much of a cult show as Seinfeld did. And I believe that's as good a place to start as any, because I'm sure that after Seinfeld, you were reluctant to get back in. And so what convinced you finally that this was something that you could do and like and ultimately flourish in?
Because it was improvised. That was the key to this, that I didn't have to learn lines and I could just swing it, because I hate memorizing lines and it makes me act, and I don't really enjoy that.
So Broadway must have been torture for you.
Torture. Yeah. Same lines every night.
Larry did Fish in the Dark, and it was a tremendous success. And about halfway through, you told me that you were looking more forward to the end of the run than you were to getting out of the Army.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Well, the Army was actually, the Army was shorter in terms of weeks. Basic training was only 8 weeks, and my occupational specialty school, by the way, which was petroleum storage. So if you have any questions at all about how the Army moves, just ask me. I got it.
By the way, the last time I saw you, I was excited to hear that you had been interviewed by David Faraday, and you told me that that was unpleasant because he did something that I promised I would not do with you today, which is probe.
He did some personal probing.
And all you wanted to talk about was golf.
I was on to talk about golf, yes. I thought that's what the show was.
And then he probed.
Golf.
And then he probed.
I didn't know it was going to be about me.
All right, listen, here's what we're going to I promised you we would talk about sports today, and you are a crazed New York sports fan. You're from Brooklyn, New York. But it is very unusual for a Yankee fan to also be a Jets fan. You know how it goes in New York. Usually it's Mets, Jets, Giants, Yankees. How did you become a Jets fan?
Here it is. I started watching the AFL. I went to the Polo Grounds to see the Titans. I wasn't a huge Titans fan. I didn't like the name Titans. And they played in the Polo Grounds and was so dingy. I didn't care for that. I was actually, I rooted for, what was it, were they playing in San, the Chargers? Were they in Los Angeles then, I think? Yeah. I love watching those games that came on. They came on at 4 o'clock on Sunday, and the weather was always nice. And they had a fantastic team with Keith Lincoln and
Lance Allworth.
What was his name? Lance Allworth. I love
Lance
him.
Larry, and the coolest uniforms and the coolest helmets ever.
The greatest uniforms, exactly. So I love them. And then when the Jets changed their name and moved to Shea Stadium, and then when Namath came on board, well, that was it for me.
And so now we are
I love Namath.
Let me shoot some Jets names at you, and you just react to them, okay?
Sure.
Mark Sanchez.
You know, I look back at those first 2 years, and I kind of scratched my head because he seemed like he seemed okay. Not great, but he seemed like he could be decent. And he's a good guy. I hate to criticize him, and I feel sorry for him in a way because of that butt fumble. That was just terrible. It made him a laughingstock, and I don't like to see that. But I hope he does well in Denver. I really do.
Geno Smith.
And he had some good games in Philadelphia.
He did have some good games, but Larry, he would always have a Sanchez moment, even in the best of games, and throw a pick in the end zone, and you'd say, oh, yeah, now I remember why he used to make me crazy.
Yeah, but of course, Mike, I should mention that he's a fan of Curb, so, if Mengele was a fan, I would have to say something decent about the guy.
More of our conversation right after a word from Mack Weldon. You know, shopping for underwear can be a chore that usually results in odd fitting and uncomfortable underwear. Well, Mack Weldon is changing the experience in shopping for them and wearing them. Mack Weldon is more than just underwear, though. Socks, sweatshirts, t-shirts, all made with precision and the utmost comfort imaginable. They started by engineering their own fabric, ensuring the design process was meticulous, so you can count on the fit being the same every single time. I have to say, I always thought all underwear was basically the same. Boy, was I wrong. I bought some to try, and let me tell you, they are light years from what I normally buy, and so comfortable. So I tried their socks. Same result. Quality, comfort, amazing. Mack Weldon guarantees their underwear is more comfortable than what you're wearing right now, and I do too. They even have a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code Lupica. That's MackWeldon.com. Enter promo code Lupica for 20% off your first order. When you and Jerry were doing Seinfeld, obviously, any fan of the show remembers what the back of the head but voice character of Steinbrenner became, such a staple on the show. But you asked him, you reached out and asked him if he would do it himself, right?
Yes. Yes. He did the show. He flew out. I think it was the last episode of the, one of the seasons, 95 or something. And he flew out to do the show. And he was on the set, he acted, and I was watching him, and I thought, oh, my God, this is, I don't know how we're going to use this, it's awful, you know. And then I saw footage of the show,
yeah,
and it was terrible, terrible. Couldn't use it. It wasn't nearly as funny as seeing the stand-in's head from the back with my voice. That was way better.
Which was great.
Seeing him. So that was a bad idea. So I had to call him up at Yankee Stadium. I called him up on the phone. I called Yankee Stadium from my office. And he got on the phone. I said, Mr. Steinbrenner, look, I have to tell you. He goes, yes, what is it, Larry? I'm a big boy. I said, well, we have to cut you out of the show. I said,
yeah.
What was the problem? What did I do? I said, well, it's not as good as watching me from the back. All right, well, go ahead. That's what you have to do. Go ahead and do it. And that was it.
That was it?
Yeah.
So you fired George Steinbrenner.
I fired George. Exactly. I fired George Steinbrenner. I never thought of it that way.
Now, was this before or after you wrote the single greatest episode in the history of network television, the Red Dot episode of Seinfeld?
Oh, yeah. Well, I wonder why you say that, Michael.
Was that the one where George Costanza mentioned me, Larry? Was it that one?
Yeah, you know what? I think it was. Yes, I think you're right. In the episode, Costanza was asked who his favorite writer was. He was interviewing for a job at Dependent Publishing, and Elaine's boss asked him who his favorite writer was, and he said, Mike Lupica.
Why are you laughing?
Mike Lupica from the New York Daily News.
Hey, when you presented this script, were there some looks around the table? Did anybody have any idea who you were talking about?
Jerry knew. Yeah. I don't think anybody else did.
And then Keith Hernandez became a running character in the show.
Well, he never came back again, right?
I thought he was in more than once. Was he only in the one episode?
When I was... No. He came back for the finale. Right. Yeah, he came back for the finale in the court.
Jerry is a Mets fan. You are a Yankees fan. Jerry took you to postseason games last year at Citi Field. And
yeah, boy, what grief I got for that. Yeah.
Now, you got grief from fellow Yankee fans for being a turncoat?
Yes. Michael Kay gave me a lot of grief. Why couldn't I go to a playoff game? Jerry's got a great box. Very pleasant.
What's wrong with a Yankee fan rooting for the Mets to do? You were rooting for the Mets, right?
I was definitely rooting for the Mets. I have no problem rooting for the Mets.
When you've been in L.A., obviously, a long time, and how is it that you have resisted becoming one of those fancy-pants celebrity, like, Lakers fans or Dodgers fans? Like, will you go watch the Rams now that they're back?
Well, that's a good question about the Rams. I'll tell you this. I've been here for over, I got here in 90. So I got about 18. I'm here about 17 years, I guess, 89. Yeah, 17 years. But I never switched to any of the L.A. teams. A lot of guys from New York who come here, they switch over. And they start rooting for the L.A. teams, whether it be the Kings or the Lakers. I love Doc Rivers, so I do root for the Clippers. But if Doc wasn't there, I wouldn't really care about them either. Now, as far as the Rams go, I have given this matter some thought. I don't
season,
know. I really
tickets?
Don't know yet. It's possible. It's possible that I could root for them, but I probably not.
When you look over your time as a New York sports fan, can you properly quantify the pull of the old Knicks, the glory year Knicks on a New Yorkers, and what that time was like in not just in basketball but in New York sports?
I think it's the only time we really had a team that that was equal to the intelligence of the Knicks fans in their play, in the history of the Knicks. That's when it all came together. And every team since, and I'm even talking about the Ewing teams, they never really matched up to those teams in the late 60s. Do you agree?
Absolutely. But here's what I will say about the Knicks of the 90s and Patrick Ewing. I always knew that people weren't going to appreciate Patrick until he was gone. And Larry, here's the thing. Even though they did not win the title in 94 or 99, I tell Knick fan friends of mine all the time, we didn't know how good we had it in the 90s when the Knicks became the hottest ticket in town again and the place was jammed and they were playing Michael and they were playing Riley and the Heat.
Yeah.
It wasn't the glory years, but if it was glory years 2.0, that time was pretty good at the Garden.
Yes. Yes, compared to compared to what followed, of course. But could you imagine a team like the Warriors in Nick uniforms playing in Madison Square Garden?
Oh, my God. I mean, you know that, that the Knicks were one pick away from Steph Curry. One pick.
I was, believe me, I was right there. I knew it. I knew it at the time. I mean, I didn't know who he would turn into, but I knew that I was hoping that the Warriors were going to pass on him. But I also read some comments from Don Nelson, I think even before the draft, that he wasn't trading, he wasn't going to trade with the Knicks or anybody because he wanted Curry. Smart guy.
All right, if it's Steph Curry versus LeBron James in the finals again, are you rooting for Steph or are you rooting for LeBron?
Well, normally I would root for the Warriors because I love their game and I love Steph Curry's game. Steph Curry to me is the greatest, he's the greatest player I've ever seen. He's more fun to watch than anyone I've ever seen. He's not as athletic as Michael Jordan, obviously. But he has, his basketball skills are unparalleled, I think. I've never seen anything like him. I hate the way LeBron is criticized by some idiots on, you know, ESPN. I hate the way he's criticized because, you know, he's only won two titles and,
right.
You know, it's so stupid. So in that regard, I would like him to win another title just to shut them up. But I don't know. I probably still, it's going to be hard not to root for Golden State, I think.
You were talking about Namath before. Who's your favorite athlete of all time?
Mickey Mantle.
Oh, man. Larry, you never even have to laugh about that.
In terms of my passion, in terms of, yeah, watching when I was a kid, for sure.
Oh, no. I mean, Bob Costas was talking about him the other day. And he like, you and Bob and Billy Crystal, you come out of that time in New York. And it's funny. We both know as sports fans, okay, who came out of the 50s and 60s, how kids just don't care. You know, they just want to, they think the good old days are now, okay? So you can't properly explain, unless you were growing up in that time, what like a mythic figure Mickey Mantle was because of the way he played, because of the way he looked, because of the name, because it was the Yankees. I'm not sure that there's anybody comparable to that right now.
No.
But Mantle, there was a magic to Mantle when he was young. And you know, Costas and I were talking about this, about Mantle versus Mays. And when they were both healthy and they were both young, other than defense, which Willie had him on, even the analytics guys, when they go back and crunch the numbers, say they would have taken Mickey.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see him play in person?
I saw him play many times. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Many times. Yeah. I was
before he started to break down.
I was by myself in the right field stands, the upper deck, for game by myself. On the subway from Brooklyn, I must have been 9 years old, I guess. I don't know. No, 10. And actually, it was the 58 World Series.
Against the Braves.
Against the Braves. Game four. Ford against Spahn. Hmm.
You saw Whitey Ford pitch against Warren Spahn in the World Series. I always tell people, if you want to go to a page of the baseball encyclopedia that gives off a beam of light, go look at Spahn's page, 363 wins.
Crazy. That great delivery, too.
And he didn't really start his career until after the Battle of the Bulge. So that was another thing. As a Brooklyn kid, you should have been steeped in all that Boys of Summer stuff, but you like the Yankees.
Because my brother, my older brother, for some reason, he had to be different, decided to root for the Yankees. And so because he rooted for the Yankees, I rooted for the Yankees. And I hated the Dodgers. I can't even tell you how much I hated them. Those series, like in 55 and 56, I would weep after losses.
Really?
Yeah. I cut school to watch Larson's, and I saw Larson's perfect game on television.
Did you tell everybody that you were a Yankee fan living in Brooklyn? The only one I ever heard about other than you was Giuliani.
Yeah, no, I told people. I never got in a fight.
All right, as a Yankee,
I mean, I get in arguments, but never a fist fight over that.
I never see you as a guy getting into a fist fight over sports. Okay,
I had a few fist fights. Yeah. Yeah. I actually did. None over after 13, but I had a few before then.
This episode of the Mike Lubica Podcast is being sponsored by our great sponsor, Indochino. Have you ever experienced suit envy? I know it's bad. Well, you're in a meeting and an event around other well-tailored suits, and suddenly your own suit seems less than, well, feeling less is no more with Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand, making suits, shirts, coats, and more to your exact measurements for a perfect fit. How do I know? I'm into Indochino now, so much so that my son is going to use them for his wedding party. And I love the way my customized suits turn out when I design them from the comfort of my own home. I simply choose my fabric, personalize my details like lapel and lining, and submit my measurements all online. In 2 weeks, my custom fit suit arrived at my doorstep, and I'm confident each time I put it on. Go to Indochino.com, or you can get measured and design your suit at the nearest Indochino showroom. And hey, you don't have to be a CEO to get a custom fit. Almost every Indochino creation is under $400. And right now you can get $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Lupica at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Lupica, for $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. An incredible deal, made-to-measure clothing. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit. How do you feel about the bat flip, by the way? Do you care?
About what?
When somebody flips a bat after they hit a home run.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like it.
You don't?
I don't like it. I'm putting myself in the pitcher's shoes, and I don't think the pitcher would feel very good about that. Mike, I'm not a rub it in guy. I don't like to rub it in.
No, even
that's rubbing it in, isn't it?
Yes, I'm not a trash talker. The other day, even when we were having our triumph as golf partners and we got going good, did we say a word? We didn't say a word, did we?
No, we didn't rub it in. Exactly. And by the way, when you rub it in, you give yourself a kinahara.
So true. As a Yankee fan, would you have ever thought, after the Subway Series of 2000, and now you've won 4 World Series in 5 years, that over the next 16 years, your team would win exactly 1 World Series?
Well, because of what I went through from, 79 to 96. Right. So I've been through it before. From 66 to 79 to 77.
Right.
So there have been, fallow periods. So it's not a shock.
But you knew how good you had it when Joe Torre was managing your baseball team.
Yeah, he was a great manager.
What was it like for you as a Yankee fan and the way your team had dominated the Red Sox for about back to the Jurassic Park years, okay?
Yeah.
Those 4 nights in October in 2004.
I knew it was. I sensed it coming.
You did?
Honestly, I did. I sensed it. When, in fact, I swear to you, I was for game 4 of that series in 2004, when they had the lead and Mariano came in the 9th inning, and he walked.
Kevin Millar, and then
Kevin
Millar.
Right.
Then they pinch ran Dave Roberts, who's now the manager.
And he walked Kevin Millar. I swear to you, I'm not making this up, because I have a witness. One of the part owners of the Red Sox, a guy named Frank, I forgot his last name, I turned to him. I was sitting in the box, and I said, the Red Sox are going to win this game, and I think they're going to win the series.
You did?
I did. Yeah. I did. I had an awful feeling.
So they win in extra innings that night. They win in extra innings the next night. They go back to Yankee Stadium. Schilling pitches on the bloody sock, and A-Rod, your guy, tries to slap the ball out of Bronson Arroyo's glove.
You have quite a memory. But I did. I just had an awful sinking feeling, especially after they lost. They blew that first game because that was it.
This episode of the Mike Lubega Podcast is being sponsored by our friends at Geico. Back to our conversation right after this. Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me, because if it doesn't confuse me, it's not going to confuse you. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company, of course, is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, damn it, I'm out of time. When we were talking about Curb before, obviously Seinfeld became one of those iconic shows that people will talk about in 100 years on television. But it seemed to me that you took as much pleasure and had as much fun with Curb to the point where, when you're out in public, can you go a day without somebody asking you what I asked you and always ask you, are you going to do one more Curb?
No, I can't. I can't. And it makes me feel bad because I feel like I've people who are disappointed that it went off or that I stopped doing it temporarily, which is it's not, and I might do it again. I just can't say for sure.
I just think of you as being on hiatus. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah,
but the demand is the demand. Seriously, the demand is tremendous. Is it not?
It seems to be. Yes. Yeah, everywhere I go, that's what I get asked.
When you started the show, did you ever dream that you would have as long a run as you did with Curb Your Enthusiasm?
No, not really. But I felt the same way about Seinfeld. I didn't think it would last more than a season or two. Any success that I've had has been a shock.
Well, but... was there any resistance from you to say, oh, my God, I'm putting my name, I'm putting myself out there, I'm following. You know, I used to say in sports, like when Bear Bryant was the coach at Alabama, you can know exactly what I mean. You didn't want to be the coach that followed the coach. You wanted to be the coach that followed the coach who followed the coach. And now you got to follow up on Seinfeld. And there you must have been a little risk averse to that, thinking that you were putting your ass on the line that way.
No. First of all, I didn't know if I was going to be any good being on the show. But after we did the special, the hour special.
Right.
And then people really seemed to like it. I thought, oh, well, if they like that, yeah, I can do that. I can do better than that. So I didn't feel like I was taking a big risk.
And then you go to Broadway. Now, to me, Broadway was a huge swing for the fences because now you're putting yourself.
That was crazy.
That was
insane. Yeah, that was crazy because I just wrote it. I didn't write it to be in it. I didn't want to be in it, and then it just kind of happened somehow. I somehow envisioned a lot of women hanging out at the stage door.
Sure. Well, did you write it? Did you always think of it as a play, or when you came up with the idea, did you think it might be a movie?
No, always a play.
And then you show it to people and they say, well, we have to do this. And then you get backers and then it's sold out. How long was the run?
18 weeks.
And it sold out. Every seat is sold for 18 weeks.
Yeah.
And there were no freebies as as I discovered when I wanted to take my wife and my family.
You paid?
Yes, I did pay. Yes, I did. In fact.
Well, you know what? See, everybody thinks that if you're on Broadway that you have tickets to give out that are free.
Right.
But you don't. Like any tickets. Did you go through my office?
I went through, well, in full disclosure, I went through your office in vain. And then I used a secondary market so I could take Taylor.
What do you mean?
Taylor.
You didn't get tickets through my office?
No. No.
Why not?
Because they said they didn't have any.
Oh, huh. That's odd.
Not that I've had, by the way, not that I've had trouble letting go of that.
Well, no, I could see. Well, maybe they didn't have any for that night. Did you ask for other nights or just that night?
I don't remember.
I probably had already given them out for that night.
But it was such big fun to go to that show, and I'm sure that you thought this more than once during the, there was a familiarity between you and the audience that was so powerful to the point where in the second act, when you finally said the place would go crazy every single night, right?
Yeah, but you know, I didn't do that. I only started doing the pretty good. It just kind of came out one night. I hadn't planned on it, but all of a sudden, I think it was like towards the very end of rehearsal. All of a sudden, it just came out. The question, somebody put a question to me, and how was it? And I said it, and then I thought, you know, I got of course a lot of big laughs, and I thought, what the hell? I might as well just do it.
How did you become Senator Bernie Sanders?
After the first debate, first of all, the first time I ever saw Bernie on television, I started to talk like him as I was watching him.
Yeah.
I just knew this guy because he's from Brooklyn. He seemed like one of my uncles or, you know, a guy from my neighborhood. So after the first debate, my agent, Ari Emanuel, called me. And I answered the phone as Bernie Sanders and started talking like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, that's really funny. You should be doing that on. You should do that. You should make a video and do it and put it on the internet. It'll go viral and all that." I said, "No. It's more like a Saturday night." Before I got the live out of my mouth, he hung up and called Lorne Michaels. And 10 minutes later, Lorne called me. And Lorne was actually getting emails during the debate saying that I should be doing Bernie from his friends.
And then it just took off from there. I mean, how many times? You've done it like, what, 3 times now?
No, I've done it about 5 times, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, if he becomes president, I'm going to have to move to New York, I think.
When you're in New York now, when you're in New York, are there places where you can go and just hang out? Is there a deli you go to? Are there restaurants that you like to go to? I don't want to.
You know, when you say hang out, that kind of reminds. I used to hang out when I was doing stand up. I would hang out in the comedy clubs. Then I would really hang out. You'd go, you hang out, you do your set, you hang around. Then you get a bite to eat. That was a hangout. But since I stopped doing that, no, there's no more hanging out. I'll go to restaurants, but no, not really. The closest I get to a hangout now is after a round of golf. I'll have a beer with the foursome, you know.
Right. But do you still think of yourself as a New Yorker?
Yes. Oh,
you do.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a New Yorker in a nicer climate.
And a reminder that this episode of the Mike Lupica podcast is being sponsored by Kronos. Kronos knows that many organizations maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, and part-time workers, for them, it can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge and are empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every single step of the way. Learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them, because Kronos is at heart a people business, at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. Now back to our conversation. What's the best day or night you've ever had at the ballpark or at a basketball arena or a football set? What's the best thing you ever saw with your own eyes?
There was a Ranger playoff win in 79, I think, the year that we played Montreal in the finals. I forgot who it was, but I remember that was pretty great.
Let me tell you what. That is a forgotten moment in time, because they won the first game against the Canadiens. I covered that series. I saw every game of that series. John Davidson became like the toast of the town. You may remember this. They win the first game. Before the second game, Bunny LaRocque was the Canadiens' goalie. He gets hit in the mask during the warm-ups. They bring Ken Dryden out of the bullpen, and that was all they wrote for the Rangers.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, it was too. But that boy, they had a great team, the Canadiens. But the Rangers were a pleasure that year to watch, I think.
You seem to me, I know you love the Yankees, and as a Mickey Mantle kid, I completely understand that, but you seem to be incredibly passionate about the Jets.
Yeah, I am. I am. I don't know why, but you're right. You're right. I will TiVo, no, you don't say TiVo anymore, DVR. Like on Sunday, I will DVR the. I'll play golf and I'll DVR the games, and I'll go through the game. I'll do one of those things. Don't tell me scores. Don't tell me. You know, I'll spend the whole day doing that, and then as soon as the round is over, I'll put my blinders on and go home and turn it on.
Do you find it as extraordinary as I do that in all the years since Namath, how rarely you've had a big-time quarterback, to the point where, we never talked about this, I think the best year that any quarterback had for the Jets since Namath was Vinny Testaverde that year for Parcells.
Yes, yes, you're 100% right. That's exactly right. And if not for that drop pass by, who was that guy? It was a back, Richie, in the playoff game against Denver.
Well, Keith Byers had a big drop. I don't remember whether.
Drop?
I thought he fumbled in that game.
Richie Anderson, now you're there a guy named Richie Anderson? Hey, could you hold on
yes,
a second?
Yes, yes.
Hold on.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I have to go. I'm going to San Francisco. I'm going to the game.
Get out of here.
I swear to God. I got to leave right now. Do you want to pick it up in the car? I'll call you from the car.
Okay, that's fine.
All right.
We're back with Larry David, and I was just telling everybody that I believe this is karmic payback for all the times I would text pictures of the golf course to you when I knew you were on your way to the theater, and now what goes around comes around, because you're going to see the Warriors and the Thunder, and I'll be watching on TV. I hope you're happy.
Believe me, I'm very happy. I hope you've learned your lesson.
I have learned my lesson. Okay, before we stop for today, I'm going to give you 5 episodes of Curb. You tell me which one of these you like the best, okay?
Okay, yeah. It's going to be very hard, by the way. Very hard to do that, but go ahead.
Survivor? Palestinian chicken, Black Swan, Michael J. Fox, or Bill Buckner?
Oh boy, that is really tough. Really, if you threw in the doll on the ski lift, you'd have really my favorite.
Larry, did you think it was at all risky, even as great a guy and a great a sport as he is, of doing that show with Michael J. Fox?
No, not for a second. I mean, once he read the outline and wanted to do it, then I thought, great, he's got a great sense of humor, and it's not going to be a problem.
Thank you for doing this today. Have fun at the game, I guess. And I have learned a valuable lesson, because you know what? What we talked about with bat flipping, my golf when you were on your way to the theater was a form of trash talk, and it's come back to haunt me now, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And by the way, I'm not done with you.
Thank you, Larry.
There's more to come. Yeah. Goodbye.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.